You remember Saturday Night Live when they used to have Garrick Morris do the little thing down for the deaf, and all he would do was shout? Well, that's what I'll do today. All right, so where was I? You messed me up. Okay, I'm going.
Kevin, you're on the road.
All right, this thing's not, okay, all right. Well, anyway, we're on the road coming up Friday for about a week or 8 days, and others will be traveling, so I just wanted to take this time to tell you. And my clicker's not working either here, and I blame Tony. And so if you want to advance me one slide, I'd appreciate it. We're doing Neglected Stories of Jesus. This is the last one. And because it's Christmas time, I had to come back to Christmas. And let me tell you, you know, it would probably just be easier if you two guys did this, okay? See, he's blaming me when we all know it's the equipment, okay?
Okay.
All right. Well, they turned up the lights. I had them turned down. It's clear as it can be right there on my screen. Okay, Neglected Stories of Jesus. Let's see if this thing's working. There we go. Stories that don't get much play. Stories that on first reading seem to be simple but have a deeper meaning, and stories that remind us of the nature of Jesus when he walked on the earth. And I got to tell you, when to come to Christmas, it's hard to find neglected stories, because I guess we know more about Christmas than anything else. But I found one, okay? I kind of found one. I got all over Barry 2 weeks ago because he made the preacher's greatest mistake. In the first lesson on Christmas, he covered all the stories. He stole them. Well, I'm not. I told him I wasn't going to allow that. And this is the story of out of Egypt. Okay. So this is the kind of the end of the Christmas story. Okay. In fact, this probably takes place 2 or 3 years after the birth of Christ. You know, it's hard for us to count. So anyway, this is the story about coming back from Egypt, okay? Matthew 2, 19 through 23. Now, you'll remember, and it's very interesting, by the way, you really need to read the Christmas story in Matthew and then read the Christmas story in Luke and see the different emphasis. For instance, if you read the story in Matthew, it mentions nothing about Joseph and Mary living in Nazareth, okay? In fact, if you just read that story, you would think that it all took place in Bethlehem and that they didn't travel. And then at the end of the story, at the end of our story, they decided to move to Nazareth due to political considerations. But of course, when you read in Luke, you find out that the story begins in Nazareth with the Annunciation and comes to Bethlehem to travel for the census, and then the wise men or the magi show up. Okay, and this, so anyway, what's happened so far? Well, the magi, wise men, the astrologers, some of your versions will say, in the east, probably in the Mesopotamia, see the star. Okay. And by the way, if there's an interesting scientific explanation of the star Bethlehem, if you go to the planetarium now on A&M Commerce campus. But anyway, they see the star and they travel to Judea. The idea is that the star began to shine the day when Jesus was born. And of course, you got to have time for them to travel from Mesopotamia to Egypt. It's got to be at least a month or two, okay, if not more than that. And you'll remember that they go to see Herod, who is the king, okay, and to find out where the king of the Jews is. They seem to be expecting Herod to be just as joyful about this announcement as they are, because we don't know how they know about this prophecy, but they see this as a good thing for the world, that the king of the Jews. And of course, Herod seems that exactly the opposite. He sees it as a bad thing for number one, i.e. Herod. Now, it's interesting to notice that at this story in the life of Christ, nobody seems to think that he's not the Messiah. not the new king of the Jews. Everybody in the whole story, including Herod, one of the worst guys in the Bible, realizes that Jesus is the king of the Jews. And it's just interesting when we get 30 years later and Jesus begins his ministry, that's kind of gone away. Okay, that's kind of gone away. So anyway, they meet Herod, and Herod says, I got a problem here. Okay, now, I got to tell you about Herod. Herod was a pretty bad guy. He's a big builder, okay? In fact, almost on his deathbed, he will kill one of his sons because he thinks his son is plotting against him. So this is kind of the kind of guy he is, okay? And so Herod is troubled, but he comes up with a stratagem. Okay, they look up and see in the Old Testament where the Messiah is to be born. They find out it's Bethlehem, the city of David, David's hometown. Joseph is a descendant of David. Okay, and so that's only 6 or 7 miles from Jerusalem. And so he says, you go down there and you worship the king, and then you come back and tell me where he is that I can go worship him. Of course, he has no intention of worshiping. He has intention of killing him. Okay. All right. Do not forget in this story the ever-present danger to the Christ child. Okay, because it's part of the story. So anyway, and what happens is, as we all know, this is the part of the story that we all know, the Magi go down, they find the Jesus, they bring the gold, the frankincense, and myrrh, and by the way, that's where we get three guys. We don't know how many they are, and I was listening on the radio, they were asking the names of them, and nobody knows the names of them. The names didn't appear till medieval times, okay? Somebody just made those up as near as we can tell. But anyway, and then they receive a message from God, said, don't go back. Okay, so they're 6 miles southeast of Jerusalem, and normally you would go north up and around the Fertile Crescent, and they have to find another way back, and they slip out of town and don't tell Herod. And Herod then, of course, figures it out finally that he's been duped and comes up with this plan. And this is all the part of the story. This is not the neglected part of the story. He says, well, I don't know what to do, but I know the baby is in Jerusalem, and these guys have been traveling so many months, and it took them this long to go down before I figured out they were not going to come back. And so I'm just going to kill every baby boy in Jerusalem up to 2 years of age. Kind of gives us a general idea that this is all taking place maybe a year after Jesus' birth. They stayed quite a while in Bethlehem, okay? And so that's what takes place. And in the meantime, Joseph receives a message from God to get out of town, to leave, okay, to go to Egypt. And that's our story, out of Egypt. Okay. Herod kills all the baby boys in Bethlehem. Okay, but here's our text. Y'all can see that right good. Okay. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. Now Joseph has taken Mary and the Christ child and gone to Egypt. We don't know where in Egypt. My guess is it wasn't all the way to the Nile. It was to whatever the border was. The idea to get outside is to get outside of Herod's jurisdiction. Okay. Probably took a road along the Mediterranean coast. Don't know if they traveled by themselves. We often see on Christmas cards the pictures of the three of them traveling to Egypt. May have gone with the local caravan, this kind of thing. But they go to Egypt, okay? And they stay until Herod dies. Now, this is interesting, by the way. We know almost to the day when Herod died, because Josephus tells us that he died at a lunar eclipse. See, you all that are not doing your astronomy, you're missing a whole lot of the Bible, okay? And we know that the lunar eclipse was in 4 BC, which is the time that historians say Herod died. Okay, so our calendars are a little bit off, okay? And you got to realize they didn't make this calendar till 700 or 800 or 900 years later, so we can give them a little bit, but they're probably 5 years off. But if you go to a church that says established published in 33 A.D., that's not right. It's probably 26, 27, or 28 A.D. Okay, so deal with it. Okay, not a big thing, is it? But anyway, so he dies, okay, and now it's time for Joseph and Mary to come back. Okay, rise and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. And he rose and took his child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. Okay, now, doesn't Matthew is not as specific for location-wise as Luke is, so he's just going back to Israel, okay? But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judah in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee. Now, let me talk a little bit about Archelaus, okay? He was the second son of Herod. When Herod died, Herod ruled just pretty much everything in Palestine, and he divided it by will. In his will, he left Judah to Archelaus. Okay, and Archelaus was not quite as bad as his dad, but pretty close, but had none of his dad's worldly wisdom. Okay, he was a stupid, mean ruler as opposed to a smart, mean ruler. Okay. In fact, you may, and what will happen to him, by the way, is he will be so oppressive that in Judea and Samaria, two nations that are under kind of conflict, that they will band together, okay, and they will go to Rome and say, you need to get rid of this king. And long story short, they do it. They depose him, Rome deposes him, sends him into Gaul, what's now France, and he never returns. And that's why we end up with Roman governors like Pilate and Festus and Felix. Okay, so I'm giving you a little history. And also, you'll remember this parable that Jesus tells about an evil ruler, and people complained about it. This was probably based loosely on that story also. So Archelaus is a bad guy. Okay, and he's not really to be trusted. The indication is he doesn't really care about this King of the Jews thing like his father did, but it's not the place that we want to go. And so they go to Galilee. Let's talk a little bit about Galilee. Galilee is a mixture of Greek/Roman civilization and Jewish civilization. Okay, but it is clear from archaeology that almost all of the larger cities that are excavated are Greek. Okay, they've got no synagogue in them. Okay, they have Greek paintings or mosaics or this kind of things, and very, very few of the cities like Nazareth, like Cana, are Jewish. Okay, which tells you this is an area where even in Jesus' day, the Jews were kind of a minority, if not in numbers, at least in economic power. Okay. And so he goes there. Okay. And the story's kind of over, isn't it? Okay. Now, of course, Luke tells the story about them going to the temple and meeting Simeon and Anna and those kind of things. But that's taken place before they go to Egypt. So they've come back to Egypt and they've settled in Nazareth. And then for about 30 years, we don't know too much about Jesus' life. You know, we know that he grew in stature and in favor with God and man. We know the one story of how they go back to Jerusalem one year and they leave him there accidentally, and he's teaching leaders. But that's about all we know. So the question is, well, what's this about? Okay, how does this fit into the Christmas story? Well, it's kind of the end of the Christmas story. But what is it about to us? What do we learn from this story? And he went and lived in a city called Nazareth, so that it may be spoken by the prophets. What was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled. He shall be called a Nazarene. Nobody, by the way, has found that in the prophets, so it's a little ambiguous there. Okay. So, here's four things that I find from this lesson, okay, which I hope will maybe give you a new light on the Christmas story and help you to apply the Christmas story in your life. It's more than just a nativity scene, okay? It's the advent, it's the introduction of God into this world in a very real way. First, Matthew takes specific interest in associating the Christmas story, the Nativity story, with the Exodus. Okay? It's obvious. He sends him down to Egypt to be saved. Well, how did the children of Israel get into Egypt in the first place to come out 400 years later? There was a great famine. The whole story of Joseph gets the children of Israel into Egypt. Okay? And there is this idea that Egypt for 400 years, or part of that 400 years before they were made slaves, was a protective place for Israel, just as it is a protective place for Jesus. This may not mean so much to us, but when we remember that Matthew was primarily written to a Jewish audience, it meant a lot to them. It's comparing Jesus to the Exodus. And the Exodus is the premier event in their national history and in their mind. When they came out and they received the law of Moses and the 10 plagues and the 10 commandments and the golden calf, all that story is central to who they are. And Matthew compares Jesus to this story and seems to be saying something similar is now happening. In other words, we've got a new Exodus. Okay. He also associates Jesus with Moses. Now, Moses is the biggest guy in their pantheon, isn't he? Okay. You know, they've got the law of Moses. Moses and the prophets. The first 5 books of the Bible are from Moses. And Matthew takes pains to compare Jesus to Moses. Anybody remember how Moses was almost killed? You remember that story? Israelites got so many of them that Pharaoh was afraid. And so he told the midwives, you remember this? Kill all the baby boys. Okay? And then Moses' mother and sister put him in a raft and put him on the Nile River so he wouldn't be killed. You remember that story? Very similar here. Okay? Moses had to be protected when he was a little baby. Moses, and then of course Pharaoh's daughter finds him and brings him into the household. A little bit different there. But finally then, Moses comes out of Egypt. He does not take this allegiance to his adopted mother and to Pharaoh, who he's evidently an adopted grandson and maybe a adopted brother of the Pharaoh and the Ten Commandments, okay? And he doesn't take that lineage. He goes back to his Israelite lineage. And so we see something about Jesus in this. That the things that are written in the Old Testament, particularly the Exodus story, particularly the story of Moses, Jesus is a completion of it, but I think we would have to say an improvement on it. It's a present-day Moses, and we will see that later on the Mount of Transfiguration. You'll remember when Jesus appears with Moses and Elijah, and Peter says, let's make 3 tabernacles, and you know the Lord takes them away, and he says, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. So even early in the Christmas story, we begin to get this idea of the story of Jesus is intertwined closely with the story of Israel in the Old Testament. And finally, and this is the thing that's most interesting to me, the fragility of the incarnation. Now, what is the incarnation? That's the idea that Jesus is a human being, but he is also divine. And you'll notice here, and I mentioned it before, there's danger. Okay? What is the Lord afraid of happening when he tells Joseph to get out of Bethlehem? He's afraid that Herod will kill him. You know, we might kind of say, well, then why didn't he just put a force field around him? Why doesn't he just protect him in a miraculous way? Well, we're dealing with humanity. Okay, he's got to have a person that can die so that that person can eventually die. And here you got this little baby, fully the Messiah. You know, the angels worship him, the shepherds worship him, the magi worship him. This little baby, as far as we know, looks like just any other little baby and can't walk, can't talk, can't do anything that a baby of the same age can't do today. But yet he's got God in him in a very special and unique way. But he's in danger. Okay. It is interesting to think how many times Jesus' mission could have failed. Well, I'm not going to stick with the word could have failed. Might have failed. And this is one of them, isn't it? Okay. This is Jesus is captive of his parents. Whatever his parents do is going to happen to him. And if Joseph says, I don't believe I'm going to Egypt. Okay, and he wouldn't be the first person that ignored the Lord talking to them directly. Don't believe I'm doing it. Jesus would have been in danger. Well, our head kind of spins when we go through the what ifs of that thing, but it is just clear here that the incarnation is just as subject to the laws of nature, i.e. life and death, as deity. Okay, and that this story is an amazing story when you just look at it, the chances of it happening that way. It just doesn't flow. You know, if we wrote a story, we would say, you know, smooth sailing all the way and everybody's kicked out of the way and all this stuff, and that's not what happened. You'll remember even when Jesus in his ministry goes back to Nazareth and the people want to kill him. And he says, it walked right through him. Okay? He was in danger. It wasn't until he was ready to die that he was going to die. But he could have died anywhere along the way without the providence of God. And this is where I really want you to understand, the bravery of people like Joseph. Joseph don't get no respect. Okay, we don't even know what happens to him after these stories. Okay, by the time Jesus' ministry, he's not mentioned. All we see is Mary and Jesus' brothers and sisters. And we just have to wonder, and the most likely thing is that he has died somewhere along the way. Okay, Joseph may have been, by the way, quite a bit older than Mary. We don't really know. So he may have lived out a normal life. And if Mary is 15, 16 at this time, he might have been 31, 32, 35, and lived to 60, which was kind of the general, you know, that was a good life, a long life back then. But he doesn't get any respect. But he is the one who protected the Christ child from physical danger. Okay? And he's the one that did what the Lord told him. How did they live in Egypt with him not having a job? He was a carpenter, right? Well, maybe he got work down there in Egypt. Maybe that's what the gold or the gold of frankincense and myrrh was. But he had to go down there and quit whatever he had left back in Nazareth, whatever he had left there in Bethlehem, and he had to go. When they went 400 or 500 miles, they didn't take the train. They didn't drive in a car. They walked. Maybe Mary, maybe they, you know, our pictures show one, some of them show a camel, some of them show a donkey. They did that, but if you've ever ridden on a donkey or a camel, let me tell you, it's not very much fun. Not day after day after day after day. And, you know, he had to go through a lot just to protect this child. And remember, in many ways, his children were not as valued back then as they are today because they lost so many of them. Now, that's not to mean that they didn't value the Christ child, but it just wasn't the same thing. You'll remember the story of David. You know, the Lord strikes his child because of David's sin with Bathsheba. And then when he finally dies, he gets up and washes his face and goes on. Okay? He pled for the child's life, but once the child was gone, he accepted it. I guess they were more accepting. So Joseph intervenes at the behest of God in history to protect Jesus. And you ask to yourself, well, what does that mean? Well, it means this to me. When we look at the Christmas story, when we look at the story of the ministry of Jesus, we find out that he trusted the greatest mission ever, over and over again, into the hands of regular people. As far as we know, Joseph was no hero. He was just a carpenter. Okay? He was of royal lineage, but that didn't mean anything back then. But he was just a guy that the Lord picked out to protect Jesus. Just like Peter was just a guy, kind of a crummy guy for a long time, that the Lord picked out to give the first gospel sermon. Just like John and James argued about who would be first in the kingdom, you know, didn't understand. They didn't understand any of it, but that in a very real way, Christianity is based on a guy, Jesus Christ, who is incarnate, who is God and man, but it has been put in the hands of regular folk. Regular folk. And today, it's in the hands of regular folk. You and you and you and me and you all back there in the corner, and all of us have a mission similar to Joseph's mission. Now, it's not to go live in Egypt. It's not to protect a 1 or 2 or 3 year old child, but it is a mission to continue the mission which began with the birth of Christ and continues today. It requires bravery. It may require us to go somewhere else. It may require us to be in danger. It may require all the things which we see for all the Christians and all the people of God, because for some reason, God doesn't do it by miracle alone. He gives it to people who trust in Him, who believe in Him, who have faith in Him, and says to them, get up and go to Egypt. Well, that's not exactly what He says, but He says something, and says something similar to Him, okay, now it's time to go back. And, oh, by the way, you wanted to go back to Bethlehem, but you can't do that. You go back to where, you know, life is not good, where economics are not in your favor. To do all these things because the gospel is the story of Jesus, but it's the story told and acted out by regular folks like Jesus. Like Joseph, who took the child to Egypt and brought him back.